property. I think there's a question about how much can reasonably be expected by a landlord. Certainly, if a drug deal occurs and you're notified about it after it occurs, you can't be held responsible for what had occurred before you had knowledge of it. And I think that when a property owner, when a landlord is unable to evict someone or the police take no action, it's simply not appropriate that any action be taken against that property. And as I said, we're not interested in taking the property of landlords, of legitimate lending institutions, because doing that doesn't further the purposes of this law. It doesn't deter drug dealers, and that's what we want to do. We want to take the profit out of drug dealing. We don't want to hurt innocent people. So I hope that responded to most of Mr. Brown's point that you were interested in, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Dean. We have a question from Representative Davidson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, thank you. It seems that we're talking here about a law that is broken, and yet, we have a forfeiture law, but apparently it doesn't go far enough. And there's no one that doesn't want to take property from those who have illegally accumulated the resources to acquire property. But it seems to me that Mr. Guinelli here is talking more about, trust me, we don't really want to go after innocent people, but the fact of the matter is that sometimes people do, in fact, get their property forfeitured. And in this wrongful seizure situation, they have to come forward and prove that they did not have this knowledge. So I didn't hear any guarantees that we would not forfeiture innocent property from innocent people. So, what are the guarantees, Mr. Guinelli? How do you guarantee to us here that if we're going to buy this trust me language that I feel that we're getting, that these kinds of things will in fact not happen?
Mr. Chairman, if I might, as the Attorney General indicated, we are now proceeding through the federal courts to do many of the things that this bill provides. And I know that the Attorney General is of the view that he would rather have that authority within his purview than within the U.S. Attorney's office, over which he has no control. So that's point number one. Second point is, I think that in many respects, the dangers of forfeiture law, any law can be abused, but there are protections under Alaska that I don't believe exist under the federal law. I presume that many of you watched the 60 Minutes clip that I watched yesterday. There were two examples in that clip. One of which was someone who was stopped at the airport with $9,000 in cash in a money belt. As I understood it, that cash was taken. There was no judicial proceeding, and the person never got his money back. I don't believe that kind of thing, could happen or is likely to happen under Alaska law. First of all, under Alaska law, if property like it would be permissible to seize that money under current Alaska law. If police officers have probable cause, or they believe they have probable cause that money is involved in drug dealing, and it is easily movable. In other words, it's not a house or something that's attached to the ground. They can seize that money, but under current Alaska law, within 48 hours, they have to present evidence to a judge that connects up that money with drug dealing, and get a court order justifying that seizure. If they can't do that, it's got to be returned. That apparently is not the procedure under federal law, and that's what happened to that gentleman in the 60 Minutes clip. The other thing that occurred in that clip is that apparently there is a requirement under federal law that in order for someone to file a claim for that property saying that they are an innocent owner, they have to put up a 10% bond. In his case, of the $9,000, that 10% bond was $900, which he didn't have at the time and couldn't post the bond. There is no such requirement under Alaska law for someone to post a bond simply to claim that it's their property and they are completely innocent. So I think for those reasons, that kind of scenario although it might happen under federal law, couldn't happen under Alaska law. The other scenario that was there is, you know, was an airplane. A pilot flew someone who happened to be carrying a couple million dollars in what was alleged to be drug money. Those were the only facts presented. Frankly, my guess is that we're only getting about half the story, and that I can't imagine that if that was the only evidence, if those were the only facts, that there would be any basis to take that plane. My guess is that there was some additional evidence that the federal government had connecting up the pilot to this particular person. You know, for example, that they had been going on similar trips, you know, once a week or once a month on a regular basis, or that they had had some previous acquaintanceship or partnership. But we didn't hear any of that. I mean, I can't imagine as a lawyer going into court against a pilot trying to get his plane simply on the basis of the fact that he flew a passenger from one destination to another. So I think that you know, we often get criticized for as prosecutors for coming before the legislature and saying trust us, and we often you know, we are often met with the argument, well, you know, I might trust you, but I don't know who might have your job next. There's no way I can really meet that argument. I've been doing this for 17 years. I don't know that I'll be doing it another 17 years, but you know, I've heard that argument raised a number of times. There's simply no way I can meet it. This bill is an attempt to make Alaska law workable in a way that will allow us to avoid having to use the federal government. And we think that it can be effective, and that it is going to be a useful tool, and that's why it's before the legislature.
Sandy, Representative, you have one
just
follow-up?
A follow-up. So then, Mr. Guarnelli, the impetus for this law came from people like yourself, or the Attorney General, or the Governor's office.
To be honest with you, there have been forfeiture bills in front of the legislature for the last 6 years. Previous bills were much, much broader than this one. They had a number of provisions that this one does not have. The impetus for this bill was from the Attorney General, who said this is something that we need to do. There's no reason why we ought to be constantly going into federal court. We ought to use our courts, and therefore it ought to be on the governor's crime package. So based on that, and based on my narrowing down the previous forfeiture bills, that's what brings it before the committee.
So, Mr. Chairman, I guess the point to be made here then is that the reason that we want to go with this bill is so that the state has more opportunity to forfeit more property, because the feds are getting too much of what we should be getting? I mean, is this one of the rationales? Because to me, that seems like an incentive issue.
Representative James?
Yes, I have a question for Mr. Quinnell, and that is, I would be more comfortable, first of all of the things that we're talking about forfeiting here, the biggest share of them would be titled property, such as real estate or vehicles or airplanes or whatever, so the ownership of record would be easily identified. And I would feel more comfortable if, in cases where it is titled property and someone other than the accused name, that the people would be presumed to be innocent unless you had overwhelming evidence or some evidence, very good evidence, that the name that is on the title is just a facade, and or that it really is belonging to the accused, or that those people are a part of the whole problem. Could you respond to that and how that could be done?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe that, and it's been my experience, that that large-scale drug dealers, the kind of people we really want to go after, are very good at hiding their property, and very good at holding their property in such a way to insulate themselves in the best way they can. If this legislature adopts a bill that in essence tells these people how they ought to structure the titles on their property, they'll do that. They will put it in the names of girlfriends, which they frequently do with their cars. They will put it in the names of their parents. They will put it in the name of someone else. Someone who will not be directly involved in the drug dealing. And I think it puts it's a heavy burden on the state to have to prove certain things merely because of a specific name on the title. So that's my response. I think it's too heavy a burden to place on the state.
Thank you.
Representative Garland?
Mr. Chairman, I just wonder if Mr. Brown has any comments in regards to Mr. Vannelli's comments, to his comments, and with the understanding that I think we all want to move forward. We want to allow the state to seize real property. I would rather have the state be able to acquire it than the federal government, but that there still are some protections that Mr. Brown was talking about. Maybe Mr. Vannelli answered some of his questions. If not, is there any specific changes in the bill that we could at least put up for?
If I could help frame that question, I asked once and said we need another meeting. We've had 6 years of meetings on this bill. If we've got some specifics, I'd really like to hear it too.
Okay, if I could just reply, and I'll couch this first of all by saying that I wish that we had the testimony before the House and Senate Judiciary in Congress when the United States Attorney's Office was, when this legislation was being promulgated. I suspect that the same type of rationale was embraced by the U.S. Attorney's Office, and they said, trust us, we're not going to do this. And I don't think you can put a lot of weight and credit to that, particularly given the language of this. The suggestions that I would make at a minimum, and I think Representative James, she hit on what I was going to suggest first, is that the standard should be raised at least to clear and convincing evidence instead of by a preponderance of the evidence. That's not an undue burden on the state to prove. Frankly, I have been defending cases for almost 11 years in this state, and I haven't found the level of sophistication of drug dealers hiding their assets. And it doesn't take a very good criminal investigator to be able to ferret out when one of these sophisticated drug dealers put their property in their wife's or girlfriend's name. I mean, that's what investigators do. And I think Chairman Porter can tell you that it's not difficult to ferret that type of information out. It's certainly not an undue burden to require the state to prove by clear and convincing evidence and put the burden upon the state and make it a presumption that the property has not been used. Second, to require, instead of just some tangential relationship of the property, require that the property contribute materially and directly to the drug to a serious drug transaction, and that the person other than a defendant, or even the defendant as it goes in this particular statute, knows, consents, and is otherwise complicit in the activity. That way, there is not this loose and tangential relationship that an innocent person could be. You could borrow $20,000 from your son. It turns out he's been living out of state for 3 years, and you put it in your house for home improvements. Turns out he got that money from a drug scam in California, or he got it in Alaska, and you were in California, and Alaska went after those assets. You could avoid the type of problems that this legislation, it will create it, and it will happen. And I, with all due respect to Mr. Vannelli, if it happens three times or once and you're the victim, it's one time too many. I suggest it's going to happen, given them this kind of power.
Mr. Brown, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
We have had a forfeiture law, with the exception of real property, for very valuable pieces of otherwise personal property for a long time. Do you know anybody who has had their house or substantial valued property taken because their kid sold something out of that car or out of that airplane or whatever?
No, but the language of the statute has changed substantially under this piece of legislation. I mean, now according to what Mr. Vannelli's saying, if I'm just relying also upon what the Attorney General just said about the cruise ship vessel also. But right now, property of any type traceable to a violation of this chapter, that's new language. The right title and interest in real property. We've never had this language in a piece of legislation before. I mean, these are all new changes to the bill.
We recognize that, but I don't see the difference between the standards for seizing other property than what this allows tracing to real property, the funds, but it's the same standard.
It's the standard, but what I'm saying is
that let me just say one more thing, that the Attorney General also quickly added that in his scenario that he thought that boat should be seized, that it would be protected under the lease provision of the bill. So, go ahead.
I don't have any further follow-up. And I wasn't trying to be derogatory. I hope you didn't accept that I was about what the Attorney General said, but I think it's telling that if that can happen, and it suggested that it would, there are some far-reaching effects of this. Fortunately, Holland American Line could have probably afforded to get their boat back, but my mom or yours couldn't.
Representative Okay, any other questions of Mr. Brown or Mr. Donnelly? Representative Davidson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to hear Mr. Gonelli's opinion as to whether or not we could get together that consensus group to move forward with some specifics about where some of the people who are certainly more expert than I regards the issues here would be able to come up with some language that would, in fact, give us more level of comfort around the table.
Mr. Gonelli?
Mr. Chairman, I have worked with John Slamy and other defense attorneys over the years on pieces of legislation to clarify language, to make sure that everyone understands precisely what is intended by the language. But when it comes down to something like this, where I think that there is going to be deep philosophical differences over, the appropriateness of the legislation, I am not confident that getting together a group like that is going to result in anything that will result in a consensus. Let's put it that way. So I'm willing to work with anyone to talk with anyone, but I don't. I'm just not confident we're going to reach any consensus.
Thank you.
Frankly, I think this is a fairly narrowly drafted bill compared to past bills, and it's tailored to address specific concerns. And I'm not certain we're going to improve it with a public defender and prosecutor committee.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Representative Davidson,
then what would be useful to myself would be at least a list of those areas where, the lay mind can see where these experts disagree and where both sides here are trying to protect the public interest. And this is why I think the legislation is so important and so difficult for laypersons like ourselves without the legal training or the legal background to deal with it. That's why I make the request.
Well, let me see if I can clarify a couple of things. Mr. Brown has raised some very understandable areas of consideration. One that I thought bears some real merit was the constitutional question about requiring someone to testify against themselves at one of these hearings, whereas the criminal matter had not yet been resolved and he might find himself having that testimony used against him in court. There is a provision that precludes that from happening, that this will be continued past that. So I think that's been asked and answered. The idea of whether this should be, the burden of proof should be beyond a preponderance of the evidence, which is, as we discussed last time, a standard civil burden of proof for property ownership or any other standard kinds of civil cases. It is the burden of proof required in most civil action. Making it clear and convincing, we could do that. We could make it proof beyond a reasonable doubt. It's policy. Which policy do you want? The things that I think perhaps we're overlooking is that, one, we have a forfeiture law. This just adds real property to it. Two, as has been elicited here in the questions and answers, the current policies of the federal government, or allowances, if you will, of the federal government just might be a little more onerous than what we're proposing with this piece of legislation. And that if we did seek forfeiture under this as opposed to the federal, there might be more protections. I guess the other one was this property used materially in the furtherance of this serious felony crime? I mean, the way I read the first page of this bill says that. Page 11, line 11, raw materials, products, that are used or intended for use in the da-da-da-da-da. I think that is the answer to that question. So, quite frankly, with the exception of the policy questions that we're going to philosophically decide, depending on your point of view. I don't know what's left to be decided.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Davis.
I understood that the Action Trust was going to come up with some language. Is that a fact that we're going to look at, or might be confused or something else there?
Yeah, I can answer that. I did ask Christine Schluss to prepare some language. What we did get is the letter that everybody's got in their packets, and I would hope to have had a specific amendment available for the committee. I would like to offer an amendment that would raise the standard to clear and convincing evidence for the new kinds of properties we're adding for real properties, because I think that they are of such a important aspect to the life and liberty of individuals that that I think the standard should be higher for the and I Mr. Chairman, I can't craft that amendment right now. I think it would be a little bit too complicated. If we could, I don't want to hold the bill up. But
I can't put my finger on it right now. The preponderance of the evidence standard is
at page 3, lines 11 and 12. But I think that if you change it there, you'd be dealing with forfeiture of all items that could be seized.
We would also have to change down through line 15, because that would change the prima facie showing also. I didn't mean to interrupt, but I just thought I'd put that out.
Well, I think that's really another issue. Well, are there any other
Mr. Chairman, this is Dean Guignoli.
Yes, Dean.
If the suggestion is that for real property, rather than the state proving its connection to the drug dealing by preponderance of the evidence, that the state does so by clear and convincing evidence, I'd want to give that a little thought, but I consult with other prosecutors. But I might not have an objection to that, because I believe that in most instances, of the kinds of property that we really want to get at, the marijuana growing operations, we're not going to have difficulty proving that it was used in connection with illegal activity, with a crack house, or with some place where somebody's got it lined with phones and they're all day lining up drug deals. I think in most of those instances, we are probably not going to have a great difficulty proving it by clear and convincing evidence, but I'd want to think about that a little, and if it's if that's something that you want to seriously consider, I think maybe that could be considered.
Fine. What I would like to do then is ask if there are any other specific areas that any committee members would like to look at in relation to amendment, and we'll have Dean and Gail do that, and we'll even run them by Mr. Brown if you'd like to continue to participate.
That's great. Are you planning on doing this today? Or?
No.
I'll be out of town until Tuesday, but I live in Anchorage.
Yes, I can. You'll be out of town until next Tuesday.
Yeah, I'm going to Seattle tomorrow and Friday, but I'll be back Monday night in Seattle. I mean, I would like to, if it's at all possible, to get a copy of the proposed amendment so that Chris Lois and myself and maybe a couple of people could look at it. If it'd be okay.
Yeah, I'd really like to get some of that. Chris
can look at it before then, all right. And that's fine.
Representative Davidson?
You asked for another issue, and in the Action Trust letter, they talk about a inclusion of a prohibition against state enforcement officers initiating federal forfeiture proceedings.
Yeah.
And what could you...
That's totally out of the province of this provision. That exists now. It would take a title change in the whole works because it's not...
Is it something that we should be looking at in another bill? Is that what you're saying?
Or if you feel that way, I mean, I would not vote for that, but if you feel that way...
Well, I'd like to know, you know, I mean, you're the person who, with the knowledge, I'm asking for you to share that knowledge. What's the problem?
Well, as I asked, I don't know of a problem in this state of the type that we have been worried about in testimony that we've had over 2 days on this bill. I don't know of one instance where that kind of forfeiture has occurred, mother lost the house because the kid sold the drugs or any of those kinds of things. Certainly, you can create a factual hypothetical that will bring these kinds of things into play, but I would ask you all to consider that we have given law enforcement and prosecutors the same power of arrest and indictment, and I would say that in many cases, arresting someone for a heinous offense is much more serious to that person's life than whether they lose their house or car. But that right, with the same level of burden of proof of reasonable cause, exists in every arrest that takes place in the state. So, I mean, I can give you 5,000 scenarios about how we could just ruin somebody by an improper arrest. You see what I mean? That doesn't mean, I guess, that we should never make an arrest.
Yeah. I wanted to also bring up a point in this letter from the Alaska Action Trust, which I think there might be a misunderstanding on their part, and I just want to clarify this for the record, and that is that there's the implication here that because the seized properties might fall back in the hands of law enforcement agencies, that they would have more of an incentive to go out and get them. Attorney General Cole's talking about that. It's my understanding that any proceeds from this would have to go into the general fund because of our dedicated fund prohibition in the Constitution. It would be available to the legislature to appropriate, and so I don't think that's a problem.
No, it isn't. It is something that there are other areas that are somewhat troublesome to me. The proceeds, for example, of the Division of Gaming far exceed their budget, yet we're cutting their ability to control gaming. You know, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me, but that is the fact, and that is the way our system works. So it's got to go into the general fund, and the only way to go back to public safety or corrections or whomever is through appropriation.
Mm-hmm. Representative Green?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. You talked about the fact that we haven't had this problem because we've had the statutes on the books anyway. And I'm concerned, or I just want some clarification. Do we have in the personal property acquisition that we have now, do we also have this effective the person having to prove that personal property was not used, or is this different language than the real property here?
Dean, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Could you respond to that, please? Did you hear the question?
I heard the question. Let me see if I understand it. The question is, does current law contain similar protections about innocent property owners when the property mm-hmm. involved is not these large pieces of property such as real property, cars, and boats? Was that it?
Yes.
Sorry, I was just trying.
Under current law, as you can see on page. I think it's page 2 of the bill, from lines 10 through line 26, a lot of language is that talks about innocent owners is taken out of there. That language specifically applies in current law only to conveyances such as aircraft, cars, and boats. And it is in this bill, the language that is added in on section 7 of the bill on page 6 would apply to any property. However, So to that extent, this bill certainly expands the statutory provisions. I believe, however, that our court would probably, under current law, read into the law those same kinds of protections for other property. In other words, I'm not certain that our court would say that an innocent property owner who has cash, let's say, an innocent owner of cash, couldn't make that same kind of proof. I think that they would say that it's probably implicit that you could make the same type of showing. But this bill certainly clarifies that and applies the same kinds of factors to determine who is an innocent property owner, whether it's a house or whether it's cash or whether it's a diamond necklace or something else. I hope that answers the question.
Well, yeah, thank you. But when I compare the wordings of the two, there's a significant difference. Maybe I'm not reading correctly, but that which is being amended, 1731.24, on personal property, to me is not as burdensome to the person who owns it as the real property suggested in Section 7, even though they're similarly numbered. And I'm not objecting to it. I'm just wondering if we're creating a situation where the person, as you say, you haven't heard, and I'm thinking of what you said, Brian, excuse me, Representative Porter, that this hasn't happened before, and I'm just wondering if it's because the law didn't almost suggest it as strongly as it does now.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I believe that the language that is being, that the language in the bill provides greater protections than the language under current law. And the reason for that is because the Alaska Supreme Court has applied a fairly strict test to I believe what it takes to constitute being in privy to the violation. So the wording is in current law is certainly different than the wording in the bill, but I believe that the bill provides greater protections, and it was really intended to do that.
Okay, thank you, Dean. What I'd like to do is ask Gail and you and Margo and Chris Schluss, if we can get her involved, to see if we can come up with some language that would appropriately do three things, or I guess a CS that would do three things. One, incorporate the recommendation on page 6 that on line 23, or have reasonable cause to believe would be stricken as the Attorney General requested. That clear and convincing evidence as a standard for the forfeiture of real property be incorporated, leaving alone the existing law. And I believe that was the only one of the things that were. And what we will endeavor to do is have that ready so we can take a look at it on Friday.
Mr. Chairman, I am going to be still out of town on Friday, but I will make myself available again by telephone if that's the committee's desire.
We will have this up first, and we'll keep you hanging, I hope, half as long.
That's quite all right.
Okay, Dean, thank you very much. We'll let you go.
Okay.
Okay, with that, that is what we'll do with 188. We have had Representative Tui on our staff sitting here all this long time. I'm sure now this has been interesting. But
is this a quote?
Don't you have to go to her committee?
The other half.
Oh.
So you need me here to.
Well,
we don't have a quorum, I guess.
We won't have a quorum.
Are we going to pass something?
Well, what we have.
Yeah, that'd be nice, yeah. We're getting in the mode. It's a clear and convincing argument.
Cindy, what bill are you here on? I'm sorry.
Too loud.
Probably too loud.
Oh, yes.
I know.
No, I, actually, we try to get those that we've previously heard first. I'm sorry. Would you like to tell us about your bill? We like to hear about HB 211.
Chairman Porter, thank you, members of the committee, for this opportunity to speak at this late date. House Bill 211 would remove a glitch in the state statute regarding local business inventory taxes, which could prevent a transportation hub from becoming an international warehousing and distribution center. It amends statute to allow municipalities, at their option, the ability to exempt goods from being held for shipment for out-of-state from inventory property taxes. Alaska's proximity to Asia and the potential for opening a northeastern sea route to Europe, which is anticipated to make a 20-day less than the Panama route, are tremendous incentives to bring warehousing businesses to Alaska from all over the world. But competition is great across the U.S. and other parts of the world. House Bill 211 would allow a local government to explore opportunities for attracting warehousing and distribution of goods. That local government would decide what exemptions to allow and then create its own ordinance to activate and govern the exemptions. In other words, should a local government want to limit exemptions, partially or fully, that would be its local option to do so. Removal of the language in HB 211 would just allow greater flexibility. House Bill 211 has a zero fiscal note from the Department of Community and Regional Affairs, the Department, as well as the Alaska Municipal League, the Municipality of Anchorage, the Southeast Conference, and the Anchorage and Fairbanks Airport support the bill. It passed out of the Community and Regional Affairs Committee with a 5-2 pass and 2 no-rex. I would appreciate your support of this legislation. If you have any questions, I would be happy to answer them. Mitch Glavo.
Thank you very much, Representative Toohey. Mitch is here to testify.
Answer questions if you have.
Mitch, do you want to?
Just briefly, Mr. Chairman, my name is Mitch Bravo. I represent the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation, and AEDC strongly supports this legislation. We are actively in the process of trying to solicit the kind of warehousing that would that this bill targets, people like Intel, IBM, AST Research, a number of high-tech companies have been targeted by the Development Corporation, to see if we can convince them to warehouse parts in Anchorage for export either to Asia or to Europe by Federal Express or UPS, and this would make our job a lot easier if you pass this legislation. Thank you.
Representative
Cox.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Perhaps.
I think I'm supposed to say that something.
I'm sure you are.
This is where we are. This is reassuring, not yes. I mean, that's where we should be, I know.
I'll change places.
Under existing law, the municipalities right now may exempt from taxation property that is intended to be exported out of state. Is that correct?
Right.
What is the finite difference that we're doing with this piece of legislation?
This is a piece of legislation that will eliminate all exemptions. What happened, there was another body that put in exemptions except for schools, for school taxation. And this will allow a municipality, not necessarily Anchorage, but it will allow Dutch Harbor, anybody, to exempt as they see fit. The only line is that Anchorage must tax for schools.
The idea of having a free trade zone is so that that doesn't happen. I mean,
exactly.
We've written a law that says, well, it won't, except for this.
Except for schools. Mm-hmm. And the competition is so great everywhere that we felt that we needed to have the discretionary ability. Maybe we'll tax totally. Who knows? It will be unwise, but it certainly is up to the municipality to do that if they need it.
Are there any further questions? Seeing none, what's the wish?
Is Bill any good?
Mr. Chairman,
I know about this bill.
Mr. Chairman, I'm now completely convinced that this is a good piece of legislation. It's something that we should be pursuing, I think, from a legislative perspective. Certainly, in support of it, I would ask that we make the motion to move it out of this committee to rules.
Thank you.
Is the next
Thank you,
stop.
John. Thank you.
With unanimous
without objection
and the zero fiscal note. Is there objection?
Thank you, sir.
Done. It was worth it. See? And look at all you learned about forfeiture.
Yeah, this has been a bad move.
Now you know.
Started
out
this morning in resources with two attorneys.
We're only halfway through the agenda.
What the law was.
Now we're coming.
What a way to go.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to guess that what's your statement? Only the brain can absorb what the
only what the
brain can absorb.
The mind can the mind can absorb what the seat can endure.
That's right. Well, I think we've reached that. It's 3:30, and I'm going to take the privilege of the chair and say,
"Evening."